We get to the third last Sunday of the church year. It's not part of the liturgical year, remember, to plug Reformation in at this point. That Reformation happens on October 31st is more just a historical accident than part of liturgical design. But that one might commemorate the Reformation with the accents not only on All Saints or All Souls, which we have reappropriated as the festival of commemoration of the faithful departed, but also as we turn the corner down the last stretch and start counting down 3-2-1, as we do for the last 3 weeks of the church year, that reminds us of the eschatological urgency of confessing the true faith and the implications that that has. The Old Testament lessons for this week and for next, and I'm going to do them both today for two reasons. One, they're relatively short and we can do it as one piece because they're just the next verses for next week. Two, because I'm not going to be here next week and then we're done, okay? And you can digest all of that and reflect it in relationship to next week's gospel. Come from Daniel chapter 7, which unfortunately is in Aramaic. So if you are coming to drill your Hebrew today, you will see Hebrew only in the letters you read, but the language is Aramaic. Some of you have had Aramaic. We do offer Aramaic as the third biblical language as an elective from time to time. But what's nice about Aramaic is that if you know Hebrew, you can kind of hack your way through this, at least to some degree, because they're really cousins, if not almost blood brothers, and they use the same script. Well, I should put it the other way. You know, Hebrew really is using Aramaic script. The script you see is the Aramaic script, not the Hebrew script. So Aramaic is at home here. Now, Daniel 7. I mean, my goodness, you could spend a course on Daniel 7. And when you're done with Daniel 7, then you can spend a course on the book of Revelation. It was essentially a New Testament commentary on Daniel chapter 7. So you've got enough grist for the mill here to last you half a lifetime. And we drop in on what are perhaps the most quoted and significant verses here from for this week, verses 9 and 10, and for next week, verses 13 and 14. We're going to work through the middle verses as well, because why skip them? That is 11 and 12. But this is the great vision of the Son of Man, which has such obvious implications for New Testament discussions, especially Christological claims, though I'll leave that discussion for Dr. Veltz in our New Testament lesson. But that's the point here. Jesus quotes this in Mark 13, and much of his own awareness of his identity and theological claims are linked to this. All right, well, you're going to have a little trouble translating, so you're going to have to bear with me here. Verse 9, Chazeh Chaweth. Well, I can't give you a quick introduction to Aramaic. I guess I can give you a quick introduction to Aramaic. Chazeh is a participle. You know this as Chozeh. One shift from Aramaic, from Hebrew to Aramaic, is that holams show up as commas. So that the participle chozeh in Aramaic is chazeh. And they love this sort of periphrastic, that is a finite verb using a participle construction. Chaweth is the kal perfect, if you will, of the verb, I said that wrong, it's not chaweth, it's chaweth, of the verb haya, which you know from Hebrew as to be. The tau at the end is the first singular suffix. So, haweth means I was. Now you add the participle to that. The verb in Hebrew is the same. Kazah means to see as in a vision. So, literally, this says, seeing I was, or I was seeing, or watching, looking in this vision. Now, by the way, you got to get the first verses here. We've had these four beasts, huh? The lion, the bear, the leopard, and the fourth one, which virtually describes description with these 10 horns coming out. And, of course, the literature on what does this mean, as you know, is vast. And if there's one thing I'd say from sort of an appropriate biblically Lutheran hermeneutic, Here's a good example where one must sort of interpret the literal sense as a more figurative sense. This is image language. And to make all of these things literalistic in the sense of interpretation is extremely treacherous. And the sheer number of interpretations that have come out in dispensationalism and millennialist positions, I think, is testimony to the fact that nobody can make it work completely. Maybe to go back to Silva's suggestion of cutting that Gordian knot by saying then maybe we should just leave it a little bit vague and as general as can be, though there are certain themes that come through here. There will be earthly kingdoms. If nothing else, four is the sort of a number of completion for kingdoms of the earth. And maybe the text is saying little more than there will always be sort of one more earthly kingdom that will seem to hold power on earth until we get to the end, whenever that is. But now, we have the four kingdoms, and while we get to what really is a final judgment scene of sorts, I was watching odd until, D is the relative pronoun, until that Karsawan is the word for thrones. Now the wan ending, the on ending, is the plural feminine ending. Thrones, Rami, were put down, and the Atik Yomin, Yathiv. Atik means ancient. This is related to the word attic. I don't think so.
Antique.
The Atik Yomin, now here's a word you know. Yom is the Hebrew yom, but the plural ending masculine in Aramaic ends with a nun. So instead of yomim, you have yomin with an N. That's another simple difference. So this is a construct chain, an ancient of days, i.e. an old guy. That's really all this means. Someone who's got lots of days to his credit, an old man. But in a very positive sense. I mean, this is not what we'd think of, you know, in disrespect, you know, my old man. But you're talking about sort of a venerable person with wisdom and stature. An ancient guy, someone ancient of days, Yathiv, sat down. This is the Hebrew verb yashav. It's another shift between Hebrew and Aramaic. Shins often show up as taus. Lavushe, that's lavush. You have the same word in Hebrew for the verb to clothe, lavash. This is his. The A is the pronominal suffix. His clothing was like teleg, Hebrew shelag, snow, chiwar, white, and sa'ar, the hair of his resh. You probably can recognize resh is the Hebrew word rosh. The hair of his head, like Amar, wool, nake, pure. That's the same word in Hebrew for innocent. So his clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. Karsie, his throne, Shivavin, again you see that een ending, flames. D is the relative pronoun of Nur, fire. Galgalohi, its Galgils. The Ohi is another pronominal suffix for its blank, plural noun. This is the same word in Hebrew. Galal means to be in a circle or to roll, as in wheels. These are the wheels. So we have this throne on wheels image, which you get in Ezekiel too. And its wheels, fire, dalik, burning fire. So this old man, who is obviously the God figure here, I mean, I think that's pretty clear, comes on a flaming throne, and fire, of course, is sort of part of the motif of the divine presence. This is both the refining fire, this is like the refining fire, which is both law and gospel, remember. It destroys and it purifies. The seraphim are related to fire, all of these heavenly images revolving around fire. 10. Nahar. Oh, this is just like Hebrew. This is the construct state. We just did this, guys, remember? Nahar, look at the vowel reduction, construct vowel reduction. You have the same thing going on. A river of Nur, of fire, Nagath is another participle, was flowing. I should correct myself. That looks like a Hebrew construct. It is, in fact, in Aramaic, an absolute form. But the word is the same, Nahar. A river of fire flowing and flowing out, sort of a parallel, from Kedamohi, from before him. Kedam, you have that in Hebrew too, Kedam in front of, from his presence. So we have more fire here. Next line, top of the next page. Aleph Alfim. Interesting, we suddenly have a Hebrew form here. You'll notice it's Aleph Alfim. I just told you that in Aramaic it should be N. Thousand of thousands. Yisham Shune. Shamash means to serve, reverence in that sense. It's an imperfect form. You see the U ending. Then you have the ne, which is object suffix. So thousand thousands served him, and Rabo, Rivwan, and myriad of myriads, or 10,000 times 10,000, however you translate that. I was never convinced that Rivbo means exactly 10,000. It means sort of like zillion. In other words, large number that gets the point across, but really you're not going to count them out and come up with exactly that number, see. Thousand, and so myriad isn't bad. That kind of leaves the actual numbers a little bit vague. Myriad of myriads, again, Kedamohi, before him, Yikumun. Now you know the verb kum from Hebrew, stood there, rose or stood before him. Dina Yathiv, Deen. Now here's another quick lesson in Aramaic. In Hebrew, the definite article is a prefixed hey. In Aramaic, the definite article is a suffixed, usually comets aleph, or the comets hey would work at times too. So this is Deen plus the definite article, which in Aramaic is at the end of the word. That's the same ah you get when you take the Hebrew word av, turn it into Aramaic, use the definite article as vocative, and it becomes Abba. That's where we get Abba from. All right, O Father, in a sense. Dina, Deen is the same as in Hebrew. Judgment, Yathiv from Yeshav, seated, was seated, sat down. Now, this deen does not mean judge. It usually means judgment, and it's probably the whole courtroom scene. All the people took their appropriate places for the sake of judgment, not just the judge. So the judgment was seated. And Sifrin, you know this, this is the plural. See the een ending? The noun is sefer, as in, from Hebrew, which means book or scroll. Scrolls or books, pethichu, were open. That's a passive form of the verb pathak, which we also have in Hebrew, to open. Books were opened. These are probably the same books that we heard last week or 2 weeks ago when we do Daniel, that was last week, when we did Daniel 12, and we had these names written in the book, in the scroll. So books were open. These are the books to see who's on the list here. Now, next week we continue with 13, but let's just quickly go through these intermediate verses because they can't be lost in this. Again, Chazeh Haweth, I was watching then, min, from the call, this is Kol, from the sound of the words, many words, which Karna, which the Karen, that's the same as in Hebrew, horn, as in animal's horn. Ram's horn, Mimalela, were speaking from Malal to speak. Now, this is going back to these horns, and if I want to make sort of the observation here that as the judgment is taking place, this arrogant and incessantly irritating little horn with the big mouth keeps talking. See? And if nothing else, I think the exegetical point here is, even at the point of judgment, those who are opposed to God's kingdom won't shut up. See? But God's going to silence it in the next verse. And I kept watching until that Kitilath, now you know katal from the paradigms, here it's actually used as the verb for what it is. Katal means to kill. This is a passive formulation. The subject is kewatha, the chawa, which means the beast. So I kept watching until the beast was killed. Now he shuts up. And huvad, and that's a hofal, if we use Hebrew terminology, of avaz, to perish, be caused to perish, destroyed. And his geshem, his body was destroyed, and it was given, again you see that passive form, to the burning of Esha. Esha would mean the Esh, the fire. All right. So now we've silenced this arrogant and incessantly loud beast. Sha'ar, and the rest, that's the same as Hebrew, Sha'ar, the remnant. The other beasts, the rest of the beasts, were destroyed. Oh, as for the rest of the beasts, they were there. The subject here is the Shaltanhon, their Shaltan. Now, the word Sultan comes from this, and it means power, authority. Their authority was destroyed. And yet, now this is an interesting line here, 12. Their authority was destroyed, but with reference to life, you see chayim there, it's the same word as Hebrew chayim, was prolonged. Life was given to them, lahon, ad zaman va'idan, for a season and a time. And boy, the ink that's been spilled on what these words mean. Are these years? Are these days? And this comes back in the interpretation at the second half of the chapter when you talk about a time, two times, and half a time. What does this mean? And again, I think the general explanation is correct. What are these verses saying? They don't have any authority anymore, but they're still kind of alive and well for a while. You see? For a while. And that while is then defined as a season, two seasons, or a time, two times. They seem to be even growing in their authority, but the next of that logical progression from one to two would be four. All right, we're doubling here. From one to two, two to four, four plus two plus one equals seven, which is the number of completeness. So instead of going from one to two to four, what does it go from? One to two to a half. And that half is saying that instead of increasing to the fullness of its power, it's cut off, sort of prematurely and unexpectedly. So there's still, this is sort of, the powers of evil are still alive and well here on earth, but their authority in an ultimate sense has been taken away. Now that's assuming that to some degree this final judgment scene has already happened. Get it? And that's sort of the now not yet business of applying this from now on you will see the Son of Man. Okay, then we get to 13, which is next week's lesson. And Jim, I'll try to do this quickly. I don't want to take too much of your time here today, though you can have all the time you want next week. And I kept watching in the Chazweh, the visions of the Leilaya, of the Lila, you know Lila from Hebrew, of the night. And Aru. Aru is the Aramaic version of Hine. And behold, looky here. With the Anans of the Shemayim, the Shemaya, the heavens, with the clouds of the heavens, Kvar Anash, Athe, Hawa. Here it is. And this is all it says. Like a bar anash, construct chain, like a bar is Aramaic ben, that you may know from the bar Jonah stuff, Barabbas in the New Testament. Like a son of man, no article, a son of man. The article can become crucial here in the interpretation of these. I'll let Veltz wax eloquent on that. Like a son of man, atha is another participle for come. Hawa is again, he was. So however you translate this, one like a son of man, or like a son of man, was coming. And next line, ad atik yomaya, we've had this, unto the old of days, of the days, mata, he came near, he approached, and kidamohi, before him, they brought him near, they presented him, or probably impersonal passive, he was presented. Interesting. I don't know what the subject of the verb is. They presented him. 14. And lay to him, Yahiv, was given, here's the Shaltan again, authority, and Yakar, majesty, glory, and Malku, kingdom. You can see the word Melech in there. And all the Amamyai, Maya, and all the Ams, the peoples, the Ummaya, the nations, and the Lishanaya, the Hebrew Lashon, tongue. So all peoples and nations and tongues lay to him, Yiflachun, worshipped, Palach, show reverence, worshipped him. Shaltana, his Shaltan, is a Shaltan Alam, Hebrew Olam. Have we done Olam? We haven't done Olam. We better do that one. His authority is an authority of perpetuity, huh? Olam. D, which la, not, Hebrew lo, which not yede, will pass away. And Malkuthe, his Malkuth, his kingdom, is one which, you almost have to supply that, the parallelism of the previous line, and his kingdom is one which not will be destroyed. Sort of a hithpael there of chaval to destroy, which will not be destroyed. So what do we have here? We have the Ancient of Days, we have one like a son of man presented before him, to the one like the son of man is now given the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. And to him all peoples of every nation and people and language worship, because his authority is an everlasting one and his kingdom will not be destroyed. There, we better get to the Greek, but we've gotten through the basic text, and you know, golly, if you can't do something with these themes, not only in terms of the general eschatological context of the last days of the year, but relating to the fulfillment of history in what Mark is talking about, you haven't been paying attention.